I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When a stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Lots to discuss today, including the fallout from Night of Champions and the subsequent Raw event this past Monday night. Not sure if anything actually happened or changed, but we'll be talking about that as well as several other topics of note this hour, answering a couple of your questions from the board as well. But Les, I know you are back in temporarily in the North Carolina, the Maggie Valley area for just a few days in between training camps, and I know you were out and about last weekend. How'd that go?
Yeah, that went good. You know, always enjoyed working with Antonio and his crew of guys. Actually, we had, you know, guys in from all over the place. Buddy Wayne, who listens to our show occasionally from Seattle, a young man named Randy that trained with him up there. I know when he walked up, he said, "Buddy Wayne said to tell you hello," and I said, "Buddy Wayne?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Seattle." I said, you didn't come all the way out here for this. But Randy's in the insurance business, so he spends part of the time in New England. He spends part of the time, I guess, in Seattle. In fact, he was heading back, I think, Seattle in a week or so. But anyway, and then some, Palmer is near Springfield, which is right on the Connecticut border. But we had some young men down from the Cape and from further up in Massachusetts, and we had a nice turnout. Worked with some kids that Spike Dudley had trained, and I was impressed with the one young man was a good leader in the ring. And, you know, I think the thing that that came across to me too, as I'm thinking, especially watching this guy, because Ryan was his name, and Ryan's never going to be a huge guy. I mean, if he got on the sauce, right, and lived in a weight room, he's not going to be the size that WWE is excited about. And of course, they don't have that many huge guys anymore anyway, as far as I'm concerned. But what I was thinking is, it was a shame that they don't understand the value of a junior heavyweight division or a cruiserweight or call it whatever, you know, a fidget weight or whatever you want. I don't know. But, there's so many young guys talented, that aren't huge, that aren't over 6 feet, that aren't 250 pounds. That it just seems to make sense to me that would come across well. But anyway, you know, we had a good time. I'm going to tell you, I went to a show, old time championship wrestling, whatever it was, show on Saturday night. And, some of the kids that were at the camp were on the show too. And, I said I saw this finish I saw was the first I'd ever seen in 54 years. And truthfully hoped it was the last I'd see it in the next 54. But this one young man, and a nice kid, but first of all, I wasn't sure what his gimmick was until after the match. But he came out dressed in street attire with a backpack. And so anyway, I guess he was supposed to be a college nerd, right, who didn't have a social life or didn't even understand the value of social life. And the heel that he worked with had a valet who also trained with us, and she... Davy is her name, and she worked her hind end off. Boy, I mean, she really busted it. I was impressed. But anyway, during this show, she comes up on the apron, and the young man who's the nerd comes up, like, and they get nose to nose, and I'm thinking Sheldon Goldberg, who promotes New England Championship Wrestling, was there, came for the seminar on Saturday, and to say hello. We hadn't seen each other in a while, and he stayed for the show, and we both were baffled by this, because they actually never, you could tell from our position where we were sitting, their faces or lips or noses never touched. And all of a sudden, the young man just falls over backwards and the heel cross on top of him. And I said, what was that? And I said to Sheldon, I said, well, best I can figure is he must have had a massive orgasm and all his blood rushed to the middle of his body, and he passed, left his brain, he passed out. And so when I asked first, I said, what's the gimmick? Well, I'm supposed to be a college nerd. I said, what the hell was that finish? Well, you know, I just get lightheaded and giddy when I'm around beautiful women. And I thought, okay. And there is one of the things that, honestly, and no offense to the young man, he busted his hump for us over the weekend too, as well as she did. The heel in this match was obviously far and above, you know, he would need to come see me, because he probably was that good. But anyway, and I'm being facetious when I say that, it's just, when I see stuff like that, I think, come on, you know, there's already tons of too much nonsense going on in the wrestling business, and to promote it at that, you know, when these kids should be worried about learning switches and takedowns and arm, you know, working the arm or working the leg and selling and facials, they're doing hokey nonsense like that. It just, come on. But anyway, I had a great time. Weather was good, and actually we got back to Antonio's Sunday evening in time to watch. He has the network, and he's got the conversion to his big flat screen. We did see the main event of the pay-per-view, and I'm not necessarily a Mark Madden advocate, but his comment about the finish of the main event, I thought, was to him Seth running in. And you know, and of course, I think it'd be hard pressed to think that there was any reason for Seth running in except to save Cena from getting his shoulders bent, or to save Lesnar from actually having to do the damn stupid job. But how was Madden said? It was like you and your wife are having amazing sex, and just as the orgasm starts, somebody opens the bedroom door. You know, it was just. It wasn't really a bad match. I thought when Lesnar opened up so strong that, my God, Cena's going to get his hand raised, you know. I honestly would have, here again, I would have involved the announcers as legitimate play-by-play and color guys, and I would have had Lesnar and Cena start a little slower, you know. Like, hey, you know, this is an extremely relevant match for both these guys. For Cena to go down two times here, does nothing at all for his image. And for Lesnar to lose the belt as quick as he wins it, obviously would be disastrous as well. So these guys are feeling each other out, and I would have built from there, you know. And in terms of the way you teach, Lesnar firing up from 0 to 100% about five times in that match, wasn't technically the greatest thing in the world either. No one's going to use that match as an instructional video, is my point. But how did we do on the pay-per-view prediction?
You were 4-up and 4-down, and I edged you out with a record of 5-3.
Where did you beat me at? Which one?
The Divas title match was the difference.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Cool. Anyway, well, now you've got to start beating me consistently, and I'll be your bitch just the same way I was Doc. So, whatever, did you watch the whole thing, the whole pay per view?
You know what? I really didn't, because, well, as I mentioned to you over the course of the week, I thought I was going to end up getting around to watching the whole thing, but I honestly just was so uninspired or not excited about the way they built to this show, and couple that with my genuine distrust that they wouldn't put the belt back on John Cena, I really was so uninterested that I found myself skimming through the show, but I didn't really watch much of anything. I only saw bits and pieces. I mean, I did watch the main event.
Right.
And I checked out Mark Henry and Rusev. Cesaro and Sheamus has gotten great reviews, so maybe I'll go back and watch it at some point, but I looked at that and said, ah, the wrong guy won. Forget it. I'm not in the mood right now. And to me, the build was just so overall uninspiring that, you know, when I didn't get a chance to see it live, I was in no hurry to get caught up.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Seth thing running in, I said to Antonio, I said, how are they going to, you know, paint it? This is a pretty picture. And then I realized they hadn't rung the bell. But that, you know, I don't know. I don't know where I'd have gone with this, but I don't think I'd have had a, you know, you've got the, to me, when your main event has a lot of outside interference or virtually any outside interference, I think it diminishes it to a bit. Sometimes you get a little more creative than that, you know, and you know, it could have been, I mean, Cena could have looked, you know, like he was actually going to win this thing, you know, and in some way come up short with, you know, Lesnar obviously doing some kind of, you know, heel number on him. But, I get tired of seeing this. Lesnar, Cena losing a match or two is not going to be the end of the world. People will not stop buying T-shirts and baseball caps. Headset and arm.
That is not what Vince McMahon thinks, Les Thatcher.
Well, Vince, I like Vince. We've always, I don't think we've ever had a disagreement, not face to face anyway, but I don't agree with everything, and I don't agree with that, but nobody asked me, so keep it.
The kids have to know that Cena is still strong and, for the record, still better than Brock Lesnar. And you know what, one funny thing I noticed that I don't know if anybody else caught, and it's nothing major, but I did get a chuckle out of it, because the announcers conveniently ignored it. When Cena went for the pin after that fourth attitude adjustment, and all the talk right there after the match and the next night on Raw was how he had the match won, he should be the champion, before Seth interfered. Guys, go back and watch that finish. Lesnar rolls the shoulder at two.
Yeah, well, you just tell the story the way you're told to tell it, not actually the way it happens. Big thing.
Yeah, I mean, he did escape the fourth attitude adjustment. You just, no one mentioned it because Seth Rollins was in the ring.
Yeah, that's, like you say, you know, if we didn't say it happened, by gosh, it didn't happen, right? I know you saw that guy fall, but he didn't really fall because it wasn't written in. I don't even understand that whole nonsensical situation. But, now I know Raw was up ratings-wise, but still was the second worst-rated show since May. The week before was the first worst-rated show since May. So get back to me when there's that's good. I'm not sure.
You know, there is something I want to ask you about Monday Night Raw, and then kind of transition that into writing, because that's going to come up here in a second. Dean Ambrose, I don't want to say necessarily paired with John Cena on Monday night, but they certainly had a common goal and a common enemy, and they started the show together and finished the show together. And in theory, you would think that putting the guy who is now on the ascent, thanks to Roman Reigns being injured, would be a good idea. You would think it would be the guy on the way up would be able to get some kind of rub off of interacting with the top babyface and being seen, particularly on this night, as an equal, right? But, and which sounds like a great theory, but I guess my question for you, Les, after watching the show, is partnering Ambrose or anybody you're trying to rocket near the top with John Cena really a good thing, given the 50-50 responses you get from John Cena? My thought about it initially was, you know, for one night, I didn't think it was bad. I thought maybe they delivered the message effectively. But if that's something that's going to persist over the next 4 or 5 weeks as we build to whatever this main event for Hell in a Cell is going to be, could it potentially do Ambrose more harm than good being aligned with Cena?
Well, you know, it depends. Like you say, it depends on where they go from here. The rub, there's not, I mean, in essence, if to me, if I'm writing this, I need Cena to, you know, Ambrose, I like the Lunatic Fringe, by the way. You're talking WEBN. They are the guys that put the fireworks on it on Labor Day weekend in Cincinnati, on Ohio River. And actually, they're a Clear Channel station. So some of those guys I used to deal with and talk to when, excuse me, we were doing 1360 Homer, the all sports Clear Channel station, all in the same building. But, you know, to me, it's more. If, you know, and again, I don't have a storyline written out here in detail, but to me, it's more Cena recruiting Dean in terms of there's strength in numbers, right? And Dean is still the you know, hey, you know, I don't want to be mad at you or that sort of thing. But, you know, but it's, I don't want to see Cena saving poor Dean and, you know, patting him on the back and saying, I understand, and that sort of thing. You know, am I making sense? I'm not sure if I am.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so it's just like, yeah, well, you know, maybe if we team up against, and I could, you know, but if they team up, I'm not interested in building friction between the two of them during the team, which has been done to death in that company, too. You know, but it's to accomplish something, we accomplish that, and then we kind of go our separate ways, you know, but it's not, you know, well, Dean, let the great John help you out here. I don't want to see it in that context. But I, you know, I see the value. What I want to know is how the hell Dean got out of that room. One of the guys there was, is a kid that I've worked with off and on and was in our Race for the Ring tournament, Vordell Walker, who was the guy with a clean shaven head.
I thought I saw him, yeah.
Yeah, that's Vordell. And I'm happy they're taking, you know, that's something that somebody touched base with me on earlier in the week. Guys that we must have signed a bunch of good guys for that tournament. Two of them, Sammy Callahan and Sean Ricker, never even got to the tournament before they, you know, went to, you know, looked at or went to WWE. And, of course, Sean's been released since then. Willie Mack got signed. He was in our tournament. There should be a bunch of our guys that are terrific. Honestly, should have got signed, but whether they will or won't, I don't know. I know they've, you know, they've talked to Adam Cole, but Tony Nese, Papadon, a bunch of those guys, you know, should be on the radar if they're not. Anyway, you know, so with Ambrose, yeah, you know, now, you know, here's the thing, and I listened to Dave and Brian, and I kind of laughed at myself when Dave said, those who think Ambrose might be stronger than Reigns could be wrong. And I thought, Dave, you're one of those people.
I thought that too. He said it a few weeks ago.
I heard you say it, right? And I, you know, here's the thing. We're talking about different cities. So are you going to get the same reaction in Memphis that you get in Chicago, that you get in Boston, that you get in Miami? I don't think so. You know, so you can sell it off to regional. You can, Memphis is maybe a little hard, more hardcore city. God knows if, you know, if you're a longtime wrestling fan there, you've seen, virtually everything there is to see and then some things that nobody else has seen. So you can't really base it on that. You know, I didn't think the audience was really into much of anything. I mean, when I say, you know, they responded, but, you know, here's another thought. I like thinking outside the box, if you had noticed once in a while, is, you know, maybe the fans that watch the show every week, like some of the fans that go to Memphis, are just tired of being the show, you know? And maybe they're just there to watch. I don't know. But, again, I'm not kicking Ambrose off the bus because the crowd wasn't smoking hot in Memphis, you know, and I still think there's now he did do, you know, I've told you and I've discussed this and I've mentioned this to some, well, like last week to the kids that I worked with up in Massachusetts. You know, the one thing is he doesn't pander to the crowd. Now, I noticed he turned the crowd a little bit in one situation, in a situation on Monday night. And I can't recall which one it was at this point in time, but why? Well, I don't know why exactly. Maybe out of frustration because he himself expected more and was, you know, was grasping at straws or reaching for it? Or could the idiots in the back have told me you need to pander to the audience, because we all have to pander, because we don't sell body parts that they're hurt the night before, and we smile when somebody kicks us in the balls? I don't know, you know, but obviously, I mean, he's making more money than I am, and I'm happy for him. So if they're telling him to do something that he hasn't done previously, I can understand, you know, that. But I don't think that just because Memphis wasn't smoking hot for Dean Ambrose that you know, tolls the end of his run. I just don't. So I don't know. You tell me. What did you think?
I got something I want to say about a little bit of that, and then I can answer your question about how Dean escaped.
Oh, you can?
You'll get a kick out of this answer, but I'll give it to you in a second.
Okay.
First, I want to talk about this, because you've been checking out Dave and Brian's Raw reviews, as have I, and perhaps those who are listening have had a chance to do that as well. If you haven't, and you're listening to us for the very first time, because this show is absolutely free today, we thank you for spending some time with us, and strongly encourage you to check out and consider subscribing to the entire site, because you get, for just $9.99 a month, 12 to 15 brand new radio shows every week, including no less than 3 per week from Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, the preeminent voices on this website, the Wrestling Observer newsletters, Figure Four weekly newsletters, and going back into the archives, audio shows going back to 2005. And again, it's all just $9.99 a month, well worth your time. But in the last few weeks, Les, in listening to Dave and Brian's Raw review, I basically was telling a friend last night, you could encapsulate the last 3 or 4 weeks worth of Raw reviews, and maybe really the last 3 or 4 months worth of Raw reviews, into one sentence, and just play that sentence over and over and over the last few weeks. And that sentence is this: the Bella segment was awful, Paul Heyman was awesome, and the rest of the show was just kind of there. Now, if you spend big money to sit at Monday Night Raw for 3+ hours, because remember, they tape a TV show before Raw airs, who's going to get excited about 2 hours and 30 minutes plus of just kind of there? You know, I don't care who you are. No one's going to get fired up after they've sat through stuff like just ridiculously long periods of complete BS segments. And you've paid big money to sit through this in person when you could be sitting at home watching it for free. At least you can change the channel there if you see something you don't like. So now you're sitting in this seat after about 2 hours less, right? And you're thinking a couple of things, possibly. Number one, not only what a waste of money this was when I could have been home relaxing, but now you're mentally bitching about getting no sleep tonight for this BS whack show, because it's going to be 45 minutes before I get out of the parking lot. Lord, I can't believe how much I spent on this beer and hot dogs. That's ridiculous. And holy shit, it cost that much for me to get my kid a shirt and a title belt? You got to be kidding me. What is there for people to get excited about after they've been through that experience and now they're being treated to, at best, a lackluster show with one segment worth seeing?
I give up. Do you have an answer to that?
How does anybody get a pop?
I don't know. I honestly don't, you know. Where does it go? Well, you know, it comes back to the fact they're still the only game in town. And so if you want to see, well, you know, and let's face it, when I say this, yes, I know TNA is still on, but there are people that don't know that they're on. I mean, the casual wrestling fan that doesn't, you know, how many times have we heard the story that when Mick Foley was there, people were saying, when are you getting back in wrestling? Or yeah. I've had people, when I say TNA, they look at me, what are you talking about TNA? They think, you know, they think I'm talking about the normal thing when you mention T and A, right? And so they are the only game in town. And so it's, you know, here we are. And you can watch us or you don't watch. And it has affected them, because we're saying it, you know, that Monday night was the second lowest rated show since May. The Monday night before was the lowest rated show since May. I don't know. You know, somebody asked me earlier in the week about how do you make the smaller guys significant? I said, maybe stop making them look like clowns, or stop. You know, well, here, Ziggler has got an amateur background. You know, how good or bad, I have no earthly idea. But he's got an amateur background. So, you know, how do you remake this guy First of all, I'd take him out of the mix, right? I'd send him down to NXT. I'd send him down to Performance Center. I don't put him on their television. I let him work their house shows that aren't taped and aren't run back because I want him out of sight and out of mind for a while. And then when I bring him back, I take away, he stops turning his back and shaking his ass. I mean, if you want to take him if you want me to take him seriously, then he's got to act with some semblance of seriousness. And you bring him back, and he says, I've loved entertaining you, but you know, my or whatever. I mean, I don't have a scenario written out. But the point is, his focus now is more on winning a title, being more serious, and you have him come across that way. You know, one of the things I say at these training camps and seminars, there were a couple young men on a show this past Saturday night that had the something from the 16th century, like the not the powdered, you know, the type of wigs, you know, that the Three Musketeers and the, you know, King Louis would wear and that sort of thing, and they wore the coats, and I'm not adverse to that, but I told one of the young men after the show was over, I said, when you come out and establish, and these guys are supposed to be kick-ass heels too, by the way, when you come out and start doing shtick, then that's who you are. You know, first impressions in that ring are no different than the first time you met your girlfriend's family or the first time or you go for a job interview, the impression you leave with those people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you come out and tell me you're a clown or tell me you're, just a crazy man or whatever, then that's what you are. And I've said it over and over again, you can't make Barney Fife into Superman. So I just said to this young man, I said, the point is go out and establish that you're a badass. And then if you throw a little organic comedy in the middle or a little shtick even, then it's not nearly as harmful to you as a performer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You know, so everybody's so concerned with getting their gimmick or acting a fool. You know, so is that easier? Absolutely it's easier. I mean, you don't need to be trained by me or the worst trainer in the world or any 10 trainers that are better than I am. You know, get in the ring, drop your pants. People laugh, you know. I mean, but will they come back to see it again next week? And that's part of my point, too, you know. So, I think everybody needs, and when I say everybody, I don't mean from the lowest indie to WWE needs to start taking that into consideration.
I want to read you an excerpt from the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter, which is up on the front page of this website as we speak. And if you are someone who is listening to us for free today, the Observer will be available to you should you decide to subscribe immediately, and a full archive of Observers as well. But Les, talking about writing these shows, Dave writes this: Mondays are usually crazy, but the 22nd in Memphis this past Monday was far more crazy than usual. Vince McMahon decided at about 6:40 p.m. to rewrite the entire show, which, among other things, shows a show can be written in less time than they usually spend writing it. I said a show, not necessarily a good show. Hear, hear, Dave. Now, the whole point was, you know, they had sent out earlier in the day that Orton versus Ambrose was going to be the TV main event, and obviously the opening segment changed that quite a bit, Cena versus Orton, Ambrose versus Kane, and Dave goes on to speculate as to why those changes were made, but in reading that the idea of Mr. McMahon was to rewrite this entire show at 6:40 p.m. not only reminded me of the very worst of WCW, but also got me thinking when seen in conjunction with the interview that you and I had a chance to check out, our friend Fred Ricciani of the Sports Courier. And if you'd like to see this interview yourself, you can go to YouTube and search for the channel known as The Sports Courier. Fred talked to Kevin Marshall, who's a former member of the WWE creative team, who was only recently let go a few weeks ago. You may recall when WWE looked to, I guess, allay the concerns of Wall Street and laid off about 7% of the workforce. That was when Kevin was let go. So he was very recently within the confines of Titan Towers. And Kevin was talking a lot about the creative process, writing for Vince, how often Vince comes in and changes things, and verbiage that we've often complained about. And Les, you and I have done a lot of talking in the last few weeks about blaming writers for this. Do we blame Vince for this? Vince is the last word, but how much goes on the writers? After having a chance to hear what Mr. Marshall had to say and putting that together with Vince rewriting the show on the fly this past Monday, what's your take of all that?
Wow, I think it's counterproductive. If I need to say it just, you know, in a short, brief sentence, it's counterproductive. You know, it makes no sense. Now, let me say this. I've never produced 3 hours of wrestling television for a three-hour show. I have produced 1 hour. And yes, that's a third as much. And yes, I know I'm old. And yes, I know it's different. And yes, I know all that. But we've made last-minute changes, not because we wanted to, because we had to. And that's, it becomes a little stressful too, you know, just before you go on the air. Well, you know, this video didn't show up via Delta Dash, and, I think I may have told you the story before. Back in Knoxville, Ron Fuller and Terry Funk were having a feud, and Terry had been sending us in promos, and you know, we'd send somebody out to Knoxville Airport to pick up the Delta Dash delivery. And so anyway, this particular Saturday morning, it wasn't there, you know, and I called, you know, I sent it, I don't know, it's lost, whatever. Well, okay, we don't have time to run it down. We need a promo from Terry. We obviously can't get him on camera. What do we do? And thank God that Dick Slater was in the territory, because Terry was Dick's idol. And Dick could do Terry Funk verbally as good as Terry Funk. So I went and found Slater, and I took him into an audio booth, and I had Bill, my director, come up with some Terry Funk action footage. And we ran the action footage and had Slater do a Terry Funk promo. And to this day, nobody knows, you know, unless I tell, nobody knew the difference. But that was just, you know, just a quick example. And I used to, you know, I used to hate to have to make changes at the last minute, because sometimes it would, you know, it kind of throw the entire show out of sync. I know Ron, we used to tease her. I'd say to Fuller, I'd say, I just love to watch you work under pressure, right? he didn't like it any better than I did, but that was his way of getting around it. It makes no sense. You know, we were a regional television show. This is national. This is worldwide. And to do it just, I can't even fathom. But, excuse me, sinus weather. In terms of, okay, so Vince is at fault. But, you know, I said to somebody last week, I said, okay, we have to write for Vince. So I'm going to come up with three goofy ideas and see which one of the goofy ideas Vince likes. I don't know if you presented him, and this guy that Mitchell that did Matthews or Mitchell, which was it? Kevin?
Marshall.
Marshall. I knew it was him anyway. you know, he made a point that Vince is kind of stuck in what he does, and he, the only way he wants to see it. Hey, I'm old. But yet I realize there are certain things that I don't think need to be changed, certain things that should, but I understand, a more mature storyline. I understand, that, you know, when I came up with Personality Profile in 1975, to put that on the Knoxville, on the Southeastern Championship Wrestling show, everyone thought it wouldn't work, but I'd seen it work, in the NFL years before. When they were doing that sort of thing. So it wasn't like it, you know, and had it not, had there been some negative blowback from us, from it on, to us, I wasn't adverse to pulling it, you know, after a couple weeks or something. But it flew and it worked. And now low-key sit-down interviews, not necessarily, well, I'd rather see him run those than the Bellas debating who did what when they were 12 years old. But, you know, Vince has got to open up a little bit, too. And, you know, we had a discussion last week about, you know, the Jericho Batista podcast, where Dave was, the guys never questioned anything. And, does Stephanie and Hunter ever question anything? I mean, I don't know, you know. So it's a combination. It's like, okay, we're entertaining Vince. And he's already got more money than God. And if the company closed today, he'll still live out his lifestyle without having to go out in the corner, street corner, and sell pencils out of a tin cup. So I, you know, you've got to have a little faith in your people. I, you know, it came down to, like, when I had the contract, there was only one of me. And, I oversaw the booking, but I allowed some of my guys on my rosters at different times to be bookers, you know. And there were times that I wasn't sure, well, let's try that, let's see. And, you know, if it worked, fine. Maybe they want to keep doing it. I know, but, you know, then it becomes shtick sometimes. And I think part of the problem here, I don't know if I'm, if I'm making any sense or not, but part of the problem is this is a huge company, you know, with the tentacles of an octopus, and, you know, they have the social media, they have merchandise, they have video sales, they have, and they have again. So he can't possibly have his finger on the pulse of, you know, someone said to me a long, long time ago that that worked in the company, or that, and they don't work there anymore. You know, it's funny, Vince says, I had my finger on the pulse, and they said, I bet Vince can't even tell you what the hell a gallon of gas costs because somebody fills up his cars, right? He doesn't even go to the gas station. So, you know, you have to be sort of the common man, or not necessarily be that, but feel what they're feeling, you know? And I think that's part of the problem.
A couple of the real interesting things I thought from that portion of the discussion between Fred Ricciani and Kevin Marshall was Kevin pointing out that scripted promos that the creative team writes for talents are actually edited line by line by Vince himself, and that if you hear any stilted verbiage that causes you to roll your eyes, 9 times out of 10, those are changes that Vince demanded. And I thought about that and remembered after he said that, that Jericho and Batista actually joked with each other about something similar, in that they were both saying how Vince has come to them asking them to use certain things in their promos, and they just looked at him like, are you kidding? The only person I've ever heard use that word is you.
Somebody said that hearing Brock Lesnar talk about the WWE Universe just out of character. Well, you know, and then what Marshall said too was, well, you know, you can't possibly talk the way the guys talk in the locker room, and you can't. You know, there's a lot of four-letter words thrown around, but you could, you know, here again, listen, I'm not comparing myself with Vince McMahon or anybody else that's a multimillionaire, because I don't even fit in that neighborhood, never mind, you know, comparing myself with them. But, you know, with the guys that I trained, and when I had a company, when I had a promotion, the guys that talked on TV were the guys that could talk. And I wanted to hear what they had. Well, I'll give you a good example. I heard him playing around. Shark Boy did a heel character without the mask, which is brilliant. And it's a shame that TNA never used it in their X division, because it would have come across really, really good. And, you know, when I heard it, I said, let's do it, you know. And he and my Matt Stryker had a hell of a feud off of with that character. You know, there's got to be a time. Yes, I know what I want overall, but if I don't let the people that I trust with being somewhat creative or totally creative let them do something, then what's the sense? You know, that's the craziest thing. You know, it's we were talking about this again this past weekend, Antonio and myself and Tom Burke, my dear friend whose house I stayed in a couple nights, and great historian in the wrestling business. Now some kid that just started training with me 2 months ago has never had a match. Am I going to let him come in and give me ideas? I'm probably not going to pay a lot of attention to that. But if you're on my roster and you are working, then I'm assuming that your intelligence about our business is increasing and growing too. So my office door was always open. You know, what do you got? Okay. That doesn't mean I was always, yes, we'll change it immediately and do it your way, but it doesn't mean they couldn't take part of what you said and use it. But, you know, That's the great bookers always did that. You know, they'd listen to everybody. Doesn't mean they'd use everybody's ideas, but they'd listen. And you've got, you know, how many times have you heard me say about the Roman Reigns promos? You know, let him say. I don't know if Joe's a great promo or not, but what I'm hearing are not the words he put in his own mouth. It's the words somebody else put there. And you hear that so often. And, I think a lot of the stuff you hear, Lana, that becomes so hokey at some point, right?
Sure.
You know, it's like, listen, we're not at war with Russia anymore. That's over since I was a kid, for Christ's sake. You know, what, you know. So, yeah, I think in that case, Vince is detrimental to his own business. I do agree with those, the host and Marshall, who was the guy being interviewed on that show, that Stephanie is probably the most professional character. You know, why? Because she's probably being herself, right? Because nobody writes lines for her. She's the boss, for God's sakes. So, yeah, you know, you've got to find out.
And she's one of the few people on that show. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cut you off. But Steph is one of the few people on the show, Les, that you really get the feeling when she's doing it that she's genuinely enjoying herself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, you know, the whole Mark Henry thing about letting us down and stuff, I know Mark. And I'm not saying he wouldn't in real life if he had let his country down or let the universe down or whatever, that he wouldn't openly say that. But I don't think he'd say it in the words I heard coming out of his mouth the other night. You know, it's just, again, it comes back to Dusty being Dusty and Flair and Wahoo, and these guys are somebody else, right? They're having the words put in their mouth. So, it's counterproductive. I'm not saying it's detrimental. And if you got the only game in town, you know, it's, you can pretty much play it any way you want. It may hinder you from doing huge box office, but it's not going to hinder you from doing anything or not from making a living because you have a corner on the market. But yeah, it's, the whole show is just, I think, too childish and too hokey and at times. And I think even for small, you know, for some young children, you know, it goes beyond goofy.
That whole interview, which is very interesting, you can check out from our friend Fred Ricciani over at The Sports Courier. You can go to youtube.com/The Sports Courier to check out that conversation with former WWE creative writer Kevin Marshall, who talks about what it's like to have to learn how to write for Vince McMahon, which is fascinating in and of itself. And that's just one of many topics those two guys cover over the course of that interview. And before I forget, Les, Dean Ambrose was on WWE Main Event Tuesday night on Miz TV when Miz asked, "How did you get out of the room?" To which Dean replied, "There was a back door."
Okay. Hey, see how creative they got. will they tell us that next week? Because I honestly, when I say that, I'm saying it half in jest, but in truth, I think that kind of is closure, right? How many other people wondering how he got out of the room? Did those guys let him out of the room?
Here's the funny thing about that is I think they may have been listening to Brian and Dave Monday night because Brian and Dave asked that same question, and Dave made a joke about him being Houdini, or saying he's not Houdini, right?
Right.
And then Miz says, "How did you get out?" Dean said, "There was a back door." There was that second or two of silence, and then laughter, just like you did, from the crowd. Miz looks flustered, and Dean says, "Well, what do you want? I mean, it's not like I'm Houdini or anything." I was like, okay, so you guys were checking it out, weren't you?
Right.
You heard that question being asked.
Sure.
But the other thing, you noticed that they closed that door because they didn't like what they heard from Dave and Brian, but they didn't answer the other question Dave and Brian asked. How did the cinder blocks get replaced with Dean Ambrose without anybody noticing?
There you go. He just walked down in front of, 16,000, 15,000. Well, actually, they weren't that many. If you got a wide shot, you notice that balcony in Memphis was not full.
Mm-hmm.
The second tier was not sold out. Which, again, you're talking about Memphis now, someplace else, you know, might have been Songhorn, I said earlier. Maybe it's just Memphis is, it's not red hot on Dean Ambrose, or it's just that they're so tainted by what they've seen so much. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I don't know, you know, but it wasn't sold out. But yeah, that's, and when I say the announcers next week say, you know, we're all wondering about Ambrose. The goofy thing is they threw him in a room with a back door and then move on. I don't mean to make a whole show out of it, but it's closure, right? I mean, so many things are left up in the air just to blow in the wind, that, you know, leave big gaping credibility gaps in your stories.
Wondering, way too many sad stories in the world of pro wrestling this week as it relates to health and folks not being well and some folks passing away. And I just wondered if you had anything you wanted to say about beautiful Bobby Eaton after his recent, well, I don't even call it a heart scare. He had a heart attack at a show last week, and apparently his pacemaker was part of the reason he's still with us today.
Wow, I love Bobby to death. I mean, he's just a wonderful guy. He really is. I mean, just... If you don't like Bobby Eaton, and I'm not sure that you've ever met Bobby Eaton, because there's no reason to dis. I mean, he's just a cool guy. He's laid back. He's, you know, Bobby's lived a hell of a lifestyle. And you know, I thought once the pacemaker was put in, you know, that things would be good. And apparently, and I don't know that he's done anything detrimental to himself, but apparently the damage, you know, health-wise was done way before that. But I know I was fearful when, I remember, a few years back, he was in a hospital up in the Tri-Cities, John City, Kingsport, Bristol area of Tennessee, and was talking about going back right back into the ring, you know, coming off of heart problems. And I know a couple guys that were friends with him and I discussed it and thought, man, no, not at all. You know, please don't do that. And he, in recent times, I don't think he has. But you know, I love him to death, and I hope, you know, that his health gets better. He's just still a young guy. Bobby's in his what 50s, I think.
Yeah, 55, 56,
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, I hope you know, the world needs more Bobby Eaton. Take my word for it.
Sunday night, apparently, Michael Moody, the son of pallbearer Percy Pringle, passed away at 30. No cause of death was listed anywhere that we could see, at least not at this particular point in time. And Mr. Moody was there along with his brother DJ to accept Paul Bearer's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame at WrestleMania this past year. And I don't care what the hell happened. 34, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's scary. You know, that's a shame. That leaves Daniel, the sole survivor. Daniel's mother, of course, passed before Bill, before his father, before Paul Bearer. I met Michael once. I don't really know Michael that well. I know that when Bill passed away, Percy, Paul Bearer, whatever the hell you want to call him, that Michael pretty much was the guy that handled, you know, Daniel was pretty, excuse me, despondent and you know, emotionally tore up about his dad's passing, to the point where Michael kind of took care of, you know, excuse me, handling the estate and, you know, and then the funeral arrangements and everything. So I just, you know, I hope, it's sad that he's gone, and I hope that Daniel's able, you know, to pull himself together on this end as well. So, oh, that, yeah, 34 is just way, way, way too young. And most sincere sympathies go out to Daniel and the family.
Time for us to answer a couple of questions from the board. If you'd like to send us a question to be answered here on Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, you are always welcome to head over to our show thread on the board and place your questions in there. We'll get to them the following week. Alessa's first question is about your foray into competitive bodybuilding long after your active wrestling career was over. What made Les want to get into competitive bodybuilding later in life? How was his training, diet, and overall mindset different between training for his wrestling career as compared to a bodybuilding show?
Well, you know, I was working with bodybuilders, and this was, you know, my in-ring career had been over for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years at that time, and I guess it was I need an adrenaline rush, right, or something. I'm not really sure. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm working with competitive bodybuilders, competitive lifters. shouldn't maybe you know, I should just do one, just for the sake of doing it. So I set out just more like an experiment. I'm going to diet, and you know, I was already lifting and everything. So, and as it were, I won my first show, my weight class. I didn't win the overall for the Masters, but I won my first show. So that kind of sparked me to do it again. Actually, I ended up doing 14 shows over from age 46 to age 54. Did 14 shows, and of course I was working with Perlo Performance, and we worked with pro bodybuilders, Sharon Bonneau, Linda Murray, Ron Love. I've trained with Tom Platz. These are pro bodybuilders that maybe some of the younger people won't know my name, but you can look them up on Google. I'm sure there's a big history on all of them. And Lance Dreher. I'll tell you, it's focus. I mean, it's entirely different from professional wrestling. I changed my lift. You know, a lot of times it was three on, one off in terms of training back and bys, chest and tries, legs on its own day. Throw the delts in with like rear delts with my back, front delts with my chest, and medial delts with whatever. I throw them in abs all the time. But to prepare for competition, you basically start 16 weeks out to diet down. And unlike wrestling, it's everything. I mean, everything comes into play. How your lifestyle, how you sleep, your nutrition, how you lift, everything, is important. And I don't have a great metabolism. I never had a great metabolism as a young man. So a lot of times, a few weeks out, I was down to I never got to zero carbs. Well, I take that back. Over a 24-hour period, I would deplete carbs completely. But sometimes just less than 100 grams of carbs a day, which, if you don't know, that's not a lot, because carbohydrates are your major source of energy. But I changed my lifting schedule up in different times. You know, I do reverse pyramid, I do pyramid, I do drop sets. I don't know if anybody understands all that. But like a drop set, let's say I'm doing lat pulls, and I start with, just grab a number here, 100 pounds, and I do, say I get 12 reps in with 100 pounds, and then I'm, that's max at 100 pounds, and I drop the pin to 90, and it takes like a 5-second break, and then I go again, drop the pin to 80, and go again till I max out. It's basically taking the muscle past its point of failure. And the only way muscles grow is to overload them. The only way to get stronger is to overload them. And, of course, you have to diet. I use the Perillo Performance Nutritional Manual. That's out there, at PerilloPerformance.com if you're interested. But we charted everything, which is a gross pain in the ass, to be quite frank. But, I had a diet track sheet that I could tell you on a daily basis how many carbohydrates I took and how much sodium, how much protein, how much fat, because I weighed and measured all my food. And it's quite exacting, believe me. And you can get down to that 16 weeks and overcarb too much going into the show and smooth out. It's about water retention. I mean, it's intricate, to do it properly. But it was, I enjoyed it, and it just got to the point. Well, I was getting more immersed in training guys in the wrestling business, and I was during this time I was doing Smokey. If you look at any of the old Smokey clips, you'll notice how much leaner I was at that time. And it's just got to be where, hey, I've done this. I've put in 14 shows. I put my time in. I know one of the guys that I used to lift with and work with me at Perillo's said to me a few years ago, hey, we should do one more Master show together. And I said, you're out of your friggin' mind. I still, now I go to the gym here now next week, I'm whole week. I'm not traveling. I'm not, don't have any camps next week. I'll be in the gym every day doing something. Now my training is entirely different. Obviously, I'll be 74 years old in October. The Waynesville Recreation Center where I go here has an indoor track around and selector stack equipment. And I'll power walk, fast walk. There's a tenth of a mile track, and I'll fast walk two or three laps, four laps to warm up. Then I'll go train, do legs, and then go back, power walk two more laps, come back in, do back, power walk another couple laps, come back in, do chest, power walk some more. And I'll throw abs in every day. Then the next day I'll do buys and tries with a power walk in. And because it doesn't, not as extensive on the body parts, I'll get on a stationary bike for a while too and actually get more time in. So I'm trying to get cardio and the lifting all in at the same time. I still eat pretty good, but I'm not as cautious, obviously, and don't need to be. So I've got a belly. I've earned it. When I saw Steamboat in Charlotte, I saw that shoulder to waist taper. I said, oh, man, I hate you. Because, hell, Ricky looks like he's 40 years old again, for Christ's sake. And, so anyway, it was a lot of fun. It was an amazing time for me. We used to go to the Schwarzenegger Classic. When I was working with Perillo, I was at the MPC Nationals in L.A., and that was in 1990. I've helped design some gyms. You know, it's been a lot of fun to have trained chest with Tom Plass, to have trained back with Ron Love, to have helped these people. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was a good time in my life. And like I say, I still lift and still try to eat halfway decent. And, I tell people my age, we need to exercise more now than we needed when we were 30 years old. You know, we thought we were bulletproof then anyway, but we weren't. And I keep as active as I can now. It's competitive bodybuilding is, Steamboat did some competitive bodybuilding. Kevin Sullivan did some competitive bodybuilding. I'm sure obviously Billy Graham, Tony Atlas, that goes without saying. But, it's exacting. It's 24/7, which obviously wrestling isn't. And you have to continue, a lot of you change your rep schemes, you do higher reps, heavy sets, it's exacting. The diet, the weight training, actually the diet and preparing for a contest is probably 65 to 70% of getting ready for that contest.
Les, do you still pay attention to the competitive bodybuilding world? And if so, what were your thoughts on this year's Mr. Olympia?
I did not get to, I still watch it a little bit. There's not much on television. ESPN used to run a bodybuilding magazine show, which, I know Phil Heath won again this year, right?
He did, yes.
Yes, yes. This is something I found out I was an MPC judge as well. The one thing in competitive bodybuilding unless the champion is totally out of shape, unless he is smooth, unless he's got holding water under the skin and smooth out his appearance, you pretty much figure he's going to win it, because the pretty much the theory there is you got to beat the champ, he's the champion, you got to beat him. But I haven't actually, like I say, watched in a while. Like I say, back when I was with Perillo, Columbus, Ohio, just 100 miles up the road from us, and the first weekend in March is the Arnold Classic. So it was a great place to go. It was a write-off, business write-off for us, and to deal with other trainers, with manufacturers, plus to see great competition. I was at the first WBA, Vince's bodybuilding thing at the Jersey Shore at the Trump Plaza, and I guess that's what it was called when the Trump's Casino, the Trump Plaza.
Yeah, Trump Plaza.
Because John had purchased advertising in Vince's magazine, and of course, with my wrestling background, John says, "You go represent us." I'll tell you what, when I saw how much theatrics they had put into it, I thought, this is launch. It's not going to fly. The same, you know, I'll never figure that out. I remember Jerry Oates and I, Jerry used to come up. Jerry used to run the NPC Southeastern Regional Championships in Columbus, Georgia. Jerry had a great gym down there, and I used to MC that for him. But anyway, we were buddies going way back, and he'd come up and stay with me, and we'd go up to Columbus and you know, go to the show. And before the WBA opened up, Vince was at the Arnold. And I, you know, went up and said hello, and I said, you know, you're going to show these guys how to promote. He said, well, we hope so. And I know he had Tom Platz, who understands, you know, pro bodybuilding and Weider and all that. And I don't know why he didn't listen, or whether Tom just listened to Vince. I don't know. But the first thing was, Vince didn't want his people in anybody else's magazine, which is absurd, because that's a huge amount of your advertisement for your company, for your supplements, for your bodybuilders. Secondly, you know, like the guy named Tony Pearson, who had a great set of lats, right? And they, you know, called him, like, I forget some name of this airplane, you know, anyway, because of his lats. When I saw the theatrics and dancing girls, you know, girls in bikinis coming out on the stage with the competitors and stuff, I said, what Vince didn't understand, or somebody didn't understand, is 10-year-old kids don't follow professional bodybuilding. You know, so all this was, I think, detrimental, you know, to them, you know, doing well. And then by the second show, Vince was into the drug trials. So all his guys were supposed to be clean. Of course, there were a couple guys who obviously were on age, you know, human growth, that weren't. But I know we went, a dear friend of mine who is a chiropractor in Cincinnati and worked on all my kids, had a great man cave in his home, and we went there to watch the second competition. And, you know, I was in getting close to contest shape to do something then, and I'm watching, I'm thinking, Jesus, I'm the better, you know, because some of these guys, being off the juice, were very smooth and puffy. So, you know, I think WBA kind of defeated itself, you know, in that respect, because they didn't, again, like wrestling, they're trying to change the industry, you know, and with the Weiders having such a grip, it wasn't going to happen.
Last question.
Okay.
Somebody on the board a week or so ago asked that you dish the dirt on what was termed as the ring rat scene back in the day. Now, I, being a man of high distinction and taste, replied on the board that the question as it was asked probably wasn't really going to fly with a distinguished gentleman such as Les Thatcher. So I came up with what I thought was an acceptable substitute. And here's the question the way I chose to phrase it. And I want to read to you exactly the response I got from this gentleman on the phone with me right now. First, the question.
All right.
How much of an impact did the nightlife in a territory have on your decisions to go or not to go there? Do you know if other guys favored certain areas because they enjoyed the nightlife there, and or things that maybe had nothing to do with the business, so they went almost because they were there for other things and the wrestling was just sort of what they did to pass the to pay the bills while they enjoyed other aspects of that particular territory? Now, I sent that question to Les, and I want to quote you exactly what Les Thatcher wrote back to me. You can ask about the nightlife. Hell, I was young, single, and a player.
It's time once again for everybody to come aboard the train.
Yes! Did I write it like playa, or did I just put player? Anyway,
player, but you should have put player with an A.
You know,
I've seen some of those suits you wore back in the day. You had some pimp suits.
You know, the actual expression wasn't ring rat; it was arena rats. But anyway,
arena rats.
You know,
as
you know, the rock and roll call them groupies. I found out that country musicians call them snuff queens. Baseball cousins.
Call them what? Say that again.
Snuff queens.
Snuff queen.
Snuff, S-N-U-F, you know, like the pinch in your jaw queen.
Yeah, yeah.
And baseball guys call them baseball annies. But, yeah, you know, I enjoyed partying, and I enjoyed, we realize, you know, the 60s were the love era, the 70s was a disco era. I say, guys laugh at me when I say it, but I said, you know, a lot of my cardio in the 70s was done in disco clubs. I mean, you go out there with a 10, 11 minute, dance track. That's a lot of cardio work. But you know, it was fun. It was fun. And it was a good time to, you know, but I never went to a territory because of that. I don't know if anybody ever did. First, the prime objective was actually to try to make money. There were territories that were very, I'm going to tell you, an old promoter said, I remember hearing him say this years and years ago. And then once I heard it, I started paying attention. There was a lot of fact to what he said. But his stance was, and I obviously won't repeat it verbatim, was you go to a show and you see a lot of good-looking young ladies, then you know business is good, meaning that the good-looking young baby faces are getting over. And
I think I know exactly who you're not directly quoting in what he said.
Okay. You may be. That particular person is no longer with us. On this planet, so maybe you don't. But there may have been more than one person said it, but there was some credence to that, honestly, you know, that, but it was, it was a great time, and I enjoyed it, and, I had a good social life, and, but I never went to a territory or back to a territory because it was great for nightlife. That was the bonus, I guess.
That was never a strong enough perk to sway you between one territory or another?
No. The only bad thing that ever, talking about social life, is when Rocky McGuire, the Mobile booker, decided that since Bobby Shane was getting over as a 17-year-old sensation, and a teenage sensation in Atlanta, that he needed one. And when Kirby and Hall and I came back into Mobile from, Lee Fields in both territories, but Rocky booked, the Mobile end. When we came over there, moved over there from Louisiana end, he decided I was going to be a 17-year-old teenage sensation. Trouble was, I was 26 years old at the time. And of course, Kirby and Hall and I, all three of us had, partied together and ran together. Dennis and I shared an apartment. And, so my social life was null and void, because at 26, I couldn't run around with 14 and 15 year old girls who, first of all, I thought, this is crazy. This is not going to get over. But we were able to sell it. And of course, females of my age weren't going to go out with a 17 year old guy. I couldn't go to bars because I couldn't show my ID. So for the period of time in Mobile before I went on to Tampa, was social black hole.
Well, then I guess that's proof, because you didn't get that gimmick and then immediately give your notice.
No. No, I didn't. But like I say, when Rocky said, we're going to do this, and I said, really? Yeah. I thought, oh, man, this is not going to fly. But, I looked young enough to get it over, so...
I can't believe there wasn't at least one 35-year-old mama who didn't want to corrupt the teenager.
Well, the one good thing is I had a girlfriend from Louisiana and that came down every once in a while. But other than that, no, not that I remember any 35-year-olds that wanted to have their way with me in Mobile and at that point, 1966 or in 67. But, social life, social life was good. It was. And, when business was hot in the territory, there was, Knoxville, when Whitey Caldwell and I got over on, when John Cazana first got television, we were the top baby faces. And, I remember we got a Christmas card signed, as far as we know, by an entire sorority at the University of Tennessee.
Hey, now.
Now, we didn't go party with the entire sorority at the University of Tennessee, but nightlife was not hard to come by, and it was fun.
And I will ask you this, were there particular territories, obviously it was not a determining factor for you in your travels, but were there a couple of places that when you knew you were coming in, you were like, oh, I missed this place?
There were places that were, more... more fun than others. Yes, absolutely. Am I going to name them? No, I'm not. Because I don't want to put this, you know, this nation that, well, the women in this area were looser than the, you know, and I, you know, but it was fun. It was fun. You know, I don't know that I missed out on the fun, but I, obviously, like I say, the main thing going into territory was to make money. Believe it or not, because you had to pay for the fun too.
Well, that is true. Well, all right. I don't want to get you in any more trouble having you doing your Godfather impersonation out here. So let's, let me just say real quick before I ask you about where you're headed this weekend and how we are actually going to run into each other. Maybe you can introduce me to a few young ladies out here. I don't know. But,
I don't know any. Well, I take that back because Jesse, that one.
See? You got one in every town, you player. Look at you.
No. This is young. My God, she's going to be my granddaughter. Jesse, that won the Reed Flair Scholarship in Charlotte, is going to be at Monster Factory this coming weekend.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah, she sent me an email a week or so ago saying that she'd signed up for it, so I'm looking forward to seeing her. And it just goes to show that she's spending the money in the right places, I think. You know, she's and getting herself out there. And I expect to see her in better shape and a better worker because it's been a while, you know. It's been almost 2 months that since I've seen her. One of the young guys that was in Charlotte was in Palmer, Mass. This past weekend, and legitimately, I had seen improvement from him over the point, you know, over what he showed us in Charlotte. So it's all good, brother.
Excellent. Well, before you talk about your weekend here in New Jersey, I want to just say real quick thank you to all the folks at Pro Wrestling Syndicate. I was down at their show in Rahway, New Jersey over the weekend, where I ran into the aforementioned Fred Bracciani of the Sports Courier. And also had a chance to visit with our teammate, if you will, here at the Wrestling Observer /F4WOnline.com site, the great Lance Storm, who worked with Just Incredible, a reunion of the Impact players this past weekend, and had a chance to sit and talk with Lance and Justin for a little while, and it was a lot of fun, and those guys can both still go.
Well, you know, I saw Justin last year when I was up for Antonio. I hadn't seen him in a long time. PJ spent some time with me in Cincinnati with WWE. And of course, always enjoys, you know, and they worked as a team, right?
They did, yes.
Yeah, cool. Great. That's super. Glad to hear it. How's the weather up your way for the weekend, by the way?
Today is miserable. Saturday and Sunday is going to be in the 80s.
Really? So
Yes, sir.
I won't need a heavy coat or anything. Windbreaker should get me by.
Windbreaker should be good for the early morning. Yeah, it's going to be mid-70s tomorrow, 80 Saturday, 80 Sunday.
All right. Cool.
Which, of course, means that you're going to be traveling up here to actually South Jersey. And tell everybody what you're going to be doing at the Monster Factory.
Yeah, well, let's, you know, we might as well cover everything here real quick. Of course, I'm still plugging Charlotte for July 30th through August 2nd next year. Speaking of Lance Storm, he, Nigel McGuinness, Dr. Tom Pritchard, and I will be back doing a four-day camp at the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest. And there will be debuting the movie... or the documentary Mid-Atlantic Memories, and it's a good shot to be seen by various promoters to learn from a crew of pretty fair trainers, and a chance to win $2,500 like I just mentioned about the young lady Jessie won this year. There's a Reed Flair scholarship of $2,500 that goes to the trainee picked by the trainers to have impressed him most through the 4 days. And anyway, you can go to MidAtlanticLegends.com, NWALegends.com, and see all the details. But yeah, this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'm flying to Philly tomorrow. They're going to pick me up, and we'll be headed to Paulsboro, New Jersey, to the Monster Factory Friday night. Tomorrow night, we're going to do a Q&A session. Then we're going to train all day Saturday, Sunday. There is no shows this weekend, but we're going to be in the ring a lot. And I'm really looking forward to it. I have never been to the facility. I've seen the pictures, and they have a complete setup, weight room, rings, plenty of space to get cardio in. And if you're still, you know, still a chance to come join us, if you're interested, you can go to monsterfactoryseminar@gmail.com or call Danny Cage at 609-471-7904. And you can actually stay, you know, he's letting some people stay. If you're in from out of town, opposed to spending money for a motel, you can, you know, stay at the Monster Factory itself. And then I've got a week off, and then we're headed to the Tri-Cities, Johns City, Bristol, and Kingsport. We're going to be in Elizabethan, Tennessee, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 10, 11, and 12. Friday night Q&A, then train on Saturday and Sunday at the Evolution Sports Gym, which is a great facility. I was up there 6 months ago. And there is a show on Saturday night in Kingsport, Tennessee, and this is all through courtesy of NWA Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I really enjoyed the show the last time I was there. And if you're interested, there'll be water, a bottled water, and lunch, both days of training. If you're interested in joining us, you can email office at smokymountain.com or call Tony Gibbons at 423-773-5449. Now, I don't have this locked in. I think I'm going to end up in Alabama probably in late November, early December. I met a promoter when I was down in Blue Ridge from there. But I am currently talking to, and I think I will be at the 9th annual Kowalski Cup in Fall River, Massachusetts, Friday, November the 7th, and do a seminar there on Saturday, the 8th of November. I don't have all the details or the contact information, but one of the young men that was at Antonio Thomas's this past weekend has contacted me, and we're trying to work the details out for that. So, and obviously I am open to, you know, to do camps and autograph signings and that sort of thing. You can check me out at les@epwt.com or lesthatcher@zoomtown.com. And the information for the camps that we do have locked in is all on the front page of epwt.com.
That is going to wrap up this free edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. If you are checking this out for the very first time, thank you so much for giving us a shot. And keep in mind that this is one of 12 to 15 new radio shows that are available at F4WOnline.com each and every week. For just $9.99 a month, you not only get all these new radio shows on a weekly basis, but you can also get back into the archives, audio shows dating back to 2005. And you also have the opportunity to get the Wrestling Observer newsletter as well as Figure Four Online Weekly and access to those archives as well. Thousands of hours of audio, probably thousands of hours of worth of reading material as it relates to the newsletters as well. Well worth a mere bag of shells, as they say, $9.99 per month. And where else are you going to hear stories about the one true ladies' man himself?
I was going to say, you probably won't find a lot about wrestling nightlife on the Observer, but...
Well, that's why they need this show.
Cool, man. That's great.
He is the legend and the legendary player, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. We thank you so much for spending some time with us this weekend at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly.
Come get on the train. Slip it easy.